Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% Lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Welcome to Cosmic Channels. I'm your host, Braden. This is your call-in show. I just host it. 100% owned by the fans. Everything we raise for Cosmic Channels goes right back into Cosmic Channels. A lot of people have been asking me, do I believe all the stories that are told? You know, it makes me think, what makes a person's story more believable? Is it that they're a good storyteller? Is it that they're a bad storyteller? What to you makes a story more or less believable? Let me know. Shoot me a message, cosmicchannelspodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up with a 5-star review if you like the show. We're going to keep doing what we're doing, and that's taking calls and listening to stories. And these are real people with real stories, or sometimes people just calling in to share a theory or, you know, pitch a crazy idea. That's all open on Cosmic Channels. You can jump on in the live stream. If you want to call in live on the show, it's Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you're listening to this, happy Halloween. We made it another year of trick-or-treating. If you're listening to this on Halloween, it's Thursday, October 31st. And unfortunately, there will be no live stream tonight because of the Halloween festivities. Everyone's out handing out tricks and treats and being with their kids. So enjoy this episode of Cosmic Channels, and I wish everyone a spooky Halloween. Let's go right to the first caller. Cosmic Channels, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Bandito.
What's going on, Bandito? How's it going?
Good. So I heard a weird theory about sleep, and I wanted to get your opinion on it because it kind of goes into the Matrix-ish. Ooh. As well. So the theory is that the reason that everybody doesn't sleep at the same time, not accounting for like daytime, nighttime things, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that we all can't sleep at the same time is the fact that you get dropped into it like a slot in like the Matrix, and there's only so many open slots at one time. So that's why, like, you can be, like, physically tired but just can't go to sleep because there's not an open slot. Or if you were asleep and you wake up in the middle of the night and then can't go back to sleep, it's because your slot was just taken by somebody else.
Ooh, weird. It's weird to think. Kind of explains sometimes when you get up in the middle of the night and you're like, I'm awake. And then you're like, fuck, can't fall asleep at all now.
Yeah. And that's why some people can, like, they, you know, hey, go to bed early because then you can get your slot right away. You can, you know, have it, you can claim it, whatever. And if you stay up late or too late, then you've lost your slot. And when we go to sleep, that's why the other side of the world is waking up, because their slots are opening for us to take. Again, not counting for day and night, light and dark. Yeah. Kind of thing. But
no, that's interesting. Yeah, it's like super sci-fi. Kind of reminds me of it gives me, like, I don't know why, but that movie, what the hell is it called? Bruce Willis is in it. Surrogates. It gives me like Surrogates vibe for some reason. But like, I don't know why, like sci-fi, like futuristic world. That's weird. So it's an interesting thing to think about. But you know what? The weird thing I was thinking about, Sleeve, actually yesterday. Have you seen any of those like weird AI videos where it's just like they're like AI right now is like your dreams, and it's like, you know, you'll be watching a guy on a motorcycle and he'll just like slowly like turn into an animal, and then the animal's like all of a sudden turns into like a guy welding, like it's almost like all over the place.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of those videos?
Kind of, yeah. Like where they, yeah.
Right, and it's like, you know, it does kind of feel like dreamy. Like, you know, when you watch these things, it has that like dream feel of like nothing really makes sense or how it's supposed to be.
It makes sense just enough to where you're not weirded out, but it's still not.
And then
100% there.
I was kind of thinking yesterday, I was like in my head, I was like, man, maybe that's what your dreams are, just it's like your AI processing, like whatever however our brains work and process the day and everything, and it's just that, it's like our AI, you know, our base level perception AI just triggering off in your brain there throughout the night while you're asleep. I was just thinking about that all the time. I've been like, man, well, we're in a simulation. Let's be real here. That's what's going on here. None of this is real. We're all just ones and zeros in some supercomputer somewhere.
That's probably true, but it's also just really strange when it comes to like to dreams and how people. So then that kind of gets goes. Let's say the whole dream matrix thing. People who can lucid dream, then that, how does that explain? You know what I mean? Like if you go into a sleep spot and, you know, that's you going into the matrix to like whatever. If you're lucid dreaming, then you realize that you're on the other side.
You do have Neo like, oh, no, you dreaming, do have Neo like powers.
Up, if are you waking up or are you going back to your? Because Invalid was saying, you know, is this the theory about the tribe who thinks this is the dream world that we're in now, and we actually go to sleep? That's when you go to the real one. And we can't, we don't really know what the real one is. So when you're lucid dreaming, are you in that quote unquote real world then? And when you say that, oh no, I'm just dreaming, and you wake yourself up, you're actually knocked back into the fake.
Yeah, is it, you know, sometimes I've been like, is sleep a thing because whatever supercomputer we're on can't run us all at the same time?
Right, it's just like SimCity. You have to power it down every once in a while.
Yeah, it's weird to think about that kind of stuff and in that context of we're in some sort of simulation. Freaks me out. Thinking about it, I'm like, oh. Well, then you start to see weird coincidences and you're like, oh, it's so weird.
And none of it, just you think about it that way, you're like, fine, nothing is real, nothing makes sense, nothing matters, so why do I have to go to work and pay my bills?
Exactly, it's bullshit.
Why do I have to go to work and pay my bills?
That's usually where everything comes down to for me, is why do I have to go to work and pay my bills? It's bullshit. I'm just writing no recourse on everything from now on.
It's all fake.
It's all made up money. None of it's real.
Except for really expensive cheese. I mean, that's real.
No, it's man, it's so strange to think though about, like, have you ever had a lucid dream?
Actually this afternoon, I came home from work and I took a little like hour power nap before I had to go back to work. And in my dream, like there was, I could see what was happening and I'm like, but no, this is a dream. So this can't be real because this person, I can't be here. Like, I haven't seen this person in like 10 years. Why would this person be here now? Like, it was that kind of thing where I couldn't control it, but I realized that the person I was dreaming about supposedly couldn't physically be where I was and what I was doing. Kind of like a lucid dream.
I've had one. It was wild experience. Cause I, in the dream, fully came to the realization that like, oh, I'm dreaming. I'm asleep. And I was riding a skateboard, and then I was just like, my skateboard can fly. And it was flying, and it was unreal. Was I was just flying on this flying skateboard. And I was like, I was in full control. And then I was like, this is why. And I was getting excited. And I think the excitement woke me up. And I was like, no, go back.
But, I love having the flying dreams, like, or the ones like I can like jump really far. Like I can jump off of my roof and like jump five roofs over type of thing, and I'm just kind of like super low gravity kind of thing where you're just like, yeah, those are my favorite dreams. Yeah,
Duchess of Duty says
that I can't fly.
She's constantly waiting for the apocalypse, so no more bills and job. Yeah,
yeah.
Just the only job is surviving. I like it.
There we go. It's coming. One day.
Yeah. Oh, it's... I mean, it does feel like... I mean, what's that... isn't there like the... What's that apocalypse clock? Is it... It's like...
Oh, the
you know, doomsday. The countdown clock or whatever. Is it the doomsday?
The doomsday clock. Yeah.
Isn't it always like? Where is it? What's it? It is still 90 seconds to midnight.
Yeah.
So.
We're getting closer and closer.
Yeah. Has that thing ever been further away though? Has there ever been a time in history where they're like, listen. Everyone, don't worry. It's 3 p.m. Like, we're good. You got a lot. We're not even close to midnight. Right? It's 9 a.m.
I mean, I think that didn't they start it, though? Like, I don't know the exact history, but didn't they start it around the time of, like, the Cold War?
I don't know.
Where, like, everybody was, like, scared of nukes and stuff? So I would say probably pre-Cold War, if we had it, it would have been that.
1963, 12 minutes to midnight.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
See, it was around the Cold War era.
Yeah.
Yeah, pre-Cold War.
Oh, we've been
hundreds. We would have been fine.
Yeah, let me scroll back here. Yeah, 12 minutes to midnight in 1963. That was the furthest away from midnight it's been, I think. Yeah. I mean, they started the clock at 7 minutes to midnight. I mean, like, couldn't they have started it a little further back? This is the longest 7 minutes in history.
Yeah. I did a wash at the laundromat the other day, and the last minute took 5, so I get it.
Oh, no, I lied. 14 minutes to midnight. It's been the safest we've been. 1995.
Oh, so it goes forward and back, forward
it
and
does.
Back.
It does, yeah,
I
yeah.
I thought it just always clicked forward.
Nope, it clicks back, too. Like, it's been bad for...
1995, what was going on? Was that Clinton?
Yeah, that was Clinton, and I think... Hold on, let me read it. The year begins ominously when the Russian military mistakes a U.S. Norwegian scientific rocket for a nuclear missile, and Russian President Boris Yeltsin must decide whether to launch a nuclear attack on the United States. That doesn't sound like it's a better time.
That doesn't sound good at all.
That incident helps bolster the case made by the U.S. hardliners that a resurgent Russia could be as much of a threat as the Soviet Union. Hopes diminish for a large post-Cold War peace dividend, and more than 40,000 nuclear weapons remain worldwide. Concerns arise that terrorists could exploit poorly secured nuclear facilities within the former Soviet Union. How are you read that and you go, oh, you know what? Let's move it back to 14 minutes to midnight after. That didn't sound... I thought this was going to be good news of, like, we were safe this year because of all these cool peace treaties. No, this was all bad. It didn't sound good at all. It sounds like we almost had nuclear war I didn't know about in 1995.
Exactly.
Makes you think of, like, what's happening that we don't know about that we're 90 seconds to midnight right now?
Too many crazies. That's plain and simple. There's a couple really big crazies out there.
Well, that's a good one. Maybe in a Mandelaverse, we've already gone around a full 24 hours a few times. I think we have. If you think about
multiple timelines, for sure.
If you subscribe to being like advanced, ancient advanced civilizations, then possibly. I mean, there's prehistoric. You know, I think we've done case files on prehistoric nuclear weapons and naturally occurring nuclear reactors. So, you know, maybe there's something going on back then we didn't know about before the Young Gadrias.
Oh, where's that?
his ears are burning somewhere.
Did I post on the Facebook page the thing about the crocodiles and Devil's Tower?
No. What is that? Okay, well, maybe you did. I just didn't read it.
You know where Devil's Tower is there in Wyoming? That big monolith that people can say it's either an ancient petrified tree or just a massive rock.
Yes.
This huge rock that's a flat top.
Yeah.
Okay. So someone has done an aerial view of that, and if you look at the aerial view and compare that to I believe it's a crocodile, that Devil's Tower is like a horn that's on the crocodile's head. And the landscape, the way that it goes with the mountain range, is actually a crocodile head and body. And you can see the eye and a tooth, and then you can see the claws coming in for the front feet on some of the other ridges that are around that area.
Yeah.
And so what the theory is on that is that, you know, obviously ancient, massive animals, land animals, lived on the planet, and that was one of the ancient ones. And so that is actually not a petrified tree or just a rock structure. It's actually bone of an ancient crocodile.
I've seen the pictures and stuff where people take where it'll just be a plateau and they zoom out and take an aerial of the plateau, and then they pair that plateau with a chalked down old forest growth, and you're like, well, that looks like the plateau looks like just the biggest stump you've ever seen. And they're like,
yeah,
that's because
that's kind of what they say devil's tower could be too.
It's petrified. And then I've seen ones where it's people show huge rock faces that they're like, you know, this looks like snake scales. Like this looks like a giant snake. Like if you look closely, it looks like a giant snake fossil, but we're just mistaking it as this giant hill. I've seen stuff like that. I haven't seen the crocodile one you're talking about. You posted it on Facebook?
I can't remember if I posted it to the Facebook page or not.
Crocodile Mountain.
It was a video.
Oh, yeah. No, no, this is... Yeah, the... Yeah, no. Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about now. I've seen this picture. Where people are like, strange rock formation or prehistoric alligator? And it's and it looks like you're like, well, that looks like.
It took me a second to see it, but then once I saw it, I'm like, oh.
It is. Yeah, it's one of the. You squint your eyes, you know, it's like you see the sailboat, you see the alligator. We are living in a fractal universe too, so it's like these patterns do replicate other places. So it's like, you know, that's.
Yeah, there's only so many choices in design.
Yeah. And it's like, but I mean that, I mean, you look at that and you're like, the thing is when you see something like this on the side of the hill and you're like, yeah, like the way it's all going, it looks perfectly like the scales of an alligator. The thing I lean to is like, it's not like you see that, you know, you're like, we see that everywhere. You know what I mean? Or they're like, here's another one, here's another one, here's another one. Where it's like, so it's like, oh yeah, this is a natural occurring thing that, you know, it can be replicated all over the place. I've never seen it line up like this. Right? Where you're like, oh, this looks like scales. That's what it looks like. And I mean, who knows how large these things were, right? Like truly, if we had more... What is it, nitrogen or oxygen? What makes them get bigger? I can't remember if it's the more oxygen content or the... right? We had more of, and that's why we had super fauna and stuff back in the day. And, these huge land, dinosaurs walking around, do we just kind of, you know, maybe it's one of those things where we just, we see the stuff and we're like, ah, you know... We can't even fathom something being that big on the planet, so we're just overlooking it, right? Maybe.
Right.
Terrifying to think about, though.
I don't know. It's strange when it comes to those rock formations, because I used to live in Sedona, and they have rock formations down there. You can Google it, Snoopy Rock. There's the Indian Head Rock. There's, all of these different things that are supposedly naturally occurring, and there is no record specifically of anybody carving them, and they're massive. So it's not like somebody can easily carve them without being seen. And it's like, okay, if we don't live in a simulation, how did Mother Nature create a rock that looks like Snoopy and Lucy? You know what I mean? How did Mother Nature create a rock that looks like an Indian head?
Yeah.
Or, you know, just, I guess you could say a face, but it's an Indian head because it's got a feather headdress type of thing. You know what I mean? That's simulation. That's the Matrix. That's a AI program that someone put together. They're like, oh, that'd be funny. Let's put a little dog on this rock. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I'm looking at the devil's tower.
Yeah.
And people are like, that's the one in Wyoming. Yeah, they're like, that's an ancient tree.
And that's another, yeah, I mean, that's a very valid theory that it's an ancient tree, and if the flora and the fauna were huge, that could totally make sense.
Like, maybe, because, like, you think about, like...
There's gotta be a way of testing it, though, right?
Well, you know... I mean, maybe, but, like, who knows, like, if it's, you know, it's covered in sediment over years, and then... I don't know. When you look at it, you're like, that's, I mean, if someone were to tell me they're like, that was a tree, I would be like, oh yeah, okay. Like, if that was just the thing they said, because it looks like it. It looks like the biggest stump you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
So, interesting. Anyways, thank you so much for calling in. Being the first caller. You've been the first caller probably more than anyone, you know that?
Yeah, well, it's because nobody else wants to call, and then if you, you know, maybe just spur them on.
I know, this.
And I'm not nervous anymore. Hey, yeah, I got over it. So everybody out there, you get over it. If you just keep calling, it's called immersion therapy.
Yeah.
And you just do it.
Yeah, and it's, listen, summer sessions is slower. Like I said, this show does way better in the fall and winter, and I think that's something we didn't realize on the first iterations of it. We were just like, oh, this show gains no traction. I'm like, no, I think it loses traction in the summer because people are out and about. And it's summer,
it's still daylight out. Why are we inside?
So it's, as soon as it starts getting a little darker, people are like, you know what I want to do? Listen to some spooky stories and call in and share my experience.
Yeah.
So anyways, thank you so much for calling in, Bandita. We'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Peace.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Be like Bandito, everyone. Listen, get over your fear of calling in by doing what you fear. Face your fears. Call into Cosmic Channels, 1-833-703-0424. But listen, if you're too much of a chicken shit to call in, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Listen, you can always send me your story to cosmicchannelspodcast@gmail.com. That's cosmicchannelspodcast@gmail.com. It's not as good as calling in, but hey, this is next best thing. There's a caller online. Callers take priority. Let's go right to the caller. Cosmic Channels, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Agent Anderson from Santa Rosa, California.
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Not much. How you doing?
You know, just kicking Cosmic Channels back up for the spooky season, getting back after it. You know, having some fun. What's new in your neighborhood?
Not a whole lot. We've just been doing. Thursday nights have been rough. I've been meaning to call back in, but it's did like a kitchen remodel, and then it's just like every week it's something else that's kind of getting in the way. So I finally had a chance.
Say no more. I understand. I just did a deck rebuild. Oh my God. What a nightmare. It took me all summer.
So I actually have a UFO related thing to talk about. But first, before I did that, you guys were talking about doing like a D&D reboot, and you're talking about characters. I think maybe during an after hours or something.
Yeah.
And you kind of mentioned some like WWF or WWE related stuff, but you guys left the best character out of it. Somebody needs to do a Paul Bearer cleric.
They're rising from the dead. I cast spirit. That's good. That's good.
I just, for some reason, I thought that would be absolutely hilarious. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, it would be funny. Through the face. I'd have to shave my face, though.
Yeah.
Listen, that's the beard hair is all I got. That's all I got left. It's my makeup.
Put some makeup on.
Yeah, it would be funny. Yeah, we're humming and hawing about doing that. There's some, you know, we're in the process of doing some gear upgrades. So we're kind of talking about like kicking something like that off. It's just been a real whirlwind of a year for us this year. So it's been, you know, really hard to maintain any kind of semblance of normal through all our life changes this year. So it's, you know, we keep joking that next week it's slowing down now. I think it's going to get back to normal. And then I saw a meme that's like, being an adult is saying, I can't wait till things slow down next week, every week until you die. So that might be where I'm at. What do you got for us tonight?
Well, today I wanted to talk about the Rockefeller UFO briefing document. Have you heard of this one?
It sounds familiar, but the name sounds familiar, but just might be Rockefeller. What's it about?
So Rockefeller, obviously, you know, you're familiar with the Rockefeller family.
Oh, yeah.
But this was prepared in the 90s, and it's kind of like a book with a bunch of UFO cases in it. And the idea was Lawrence Rockefeller, by the way, is the guy who's behind this. The idea was to make a bunch of copies and distribute them to influential people, you know, presidents, senators, and stuff like that all around the world, to try to get some disclosure activity going. So it was funded by Lawrence Rockefeller, and it was written by Don Berliner, Marie Galbraith, and Antonio Huniz, and it was presented by QFONS, FUFOR, and MUFON in December of 1995. Even though, to my knowledge, this was never published as like an actual book, it is available online as a PDF if anybody wants to look it up. Just Google it. The actual title is...
I'm just pulling it up here. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Unidentified Flying Objects Briefing Document, The Best Available Evidence by Don Berliner. So just Google something like that. It'll come up right away.
It's on Goodreads. So you can look it up on Goodreads. That's where I have it pulled up right now.
Yeah. And it's got like an introduction. It's got a bunch of cases that, you know, you've probably done most of these on your show. It's got summaries of those cases, and then it has a couple of appendixes. But my favorite part in this whole document is towards the end, there's a section of quotes from famous people or important people in government. And some of these quotes are pretty crazy. So, for example, there's one from General Douglas MacArthur. He was he fought in World War I, and he eventually made his way up to be a general and the chief of staff of the army. And in the United States military, chief of staff that's pretty much as high as you can get in the command structure. So this guy had access to like all the information. So can I hit you with a quote?
Yeah. Hit me with a quote.
All right. Here it goes. Because of the developments of science, all the countries on Earth will have to unite to survive and make a common front against attack by people from other planets. The politics of the future will be cosmic or interplanetary. And that's from 1955. And why would a general say something like that in 1955? It's a little weird, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange thing. Because, listen, I'm not saying that a lot of times when you hear some of these generals talk, they're pretty grounded. You know what I mean? So to hear that from someone so high ranking is like, what do you know that I don't, that we don't?
Yeah, they're kind of being around the bush, but they're kind of not, you know. Yeah,
they're like, we could be in trouble in the future, very soon. Yeah. Well, and then it goes to like you hear about like, you know, us recovering crafts around this, you know, around this time and stuff, and it's like, are we concerned with beings coming back for these crafts, or the recovered, you know, aliens, if we're thinking Roswell or something, like, maybe it's one of those things where these things were just in transit for so long that we're like, when they come here, we're like, ooh,
we probably have a good, like, you know, based on our calculations, like, it's going to take them 40 years to get here or whatever, right? If yeah. they're on their way, and we could be in trouble if they're coming. Like,
yeah,
maybe these crafts sent out a signal. It's just, it's weird. It's weird. It's a weird thing for a general to be like, especially in the United States, to be like, we need to all come together to face a common front.
Yeah, it's quite a lot. There are pages and pages of these quotes, so I'm obviously don't have time to read all of them, but I have a couple here that I thought were interesting. Here's a short one by Harry S. Truman. When he was president, he said, "I can assure you the flying saucers, given that they exist, are not constructed by any power on Earth." That's kind of interesting. A little short little quote there, but that's just kind of goes to show you that there might be more to this than they're letting on.
Well, I mean, even if you think about, like, that's back in the day, like, but if you think about even, like, Commander Fravor's, you know, accounts of seeing these things, and even if you go, you know, there's that recent interview I saw with Trump where they're asking him about aliens, and he says, "Well, I've had people, high-ranking, you know, pilots and stuff," and he goes on this tangent about Tom Cruise for a little bit. And he brings it back, yeah. And he goes, you know, "These people are not people to bullshit. And they said they've seen these things. They're spherical. They move 4 or 5 times faster than our F-22s and can outmaneuver us. They're no one has this stuff." Right? Like,
yeah.
Like, let's be realistic. You know, if you're to believe, you know, there's different people that may believe that during Operation Osvayakim, where Russia was taking scientists and we were taking scientists from Operation Paperclip, that they were taking flight scientists and airplane engineers, and they were advanced airplane. I'm just saying, we would have seen that stuff by now. Like, we would have seen Russia's, yeah. By this, like, maybe back then you could have thought that, but, like, now I would say, like, America's pretty undisputed king of the skies. Like, as far as we know, unless, like, someone's really, like, been like, "You know what? We're only going to pull this out if we really, really, really need it." But then why would they go and fly it, you know, during military drills? You know what I mean? It seems like a weird thing to do.
They wouldn't test them over civilian populations either. That wouldn't make any sense.
No, you wouldn't want to be like, "We don't want anyone to think we even have this."
Yeah.
Or could be us.
Yeah. That's why I like historic cases like from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, because back then we were still just figuring out, you know, jets and that kind of thing. So if you see something making right angle turns going Mach 2, you know it definitely wasn't something that we built.
Yeah, or we had. Yeah, man, it's super interesting that to, like, the history of these and, like, the amount of high ranking officials that have said stuff like this. I mean, we had the guy, the commander in Paul something in Canada too, and he was like a general in the high up in the military. He was like, "There's Paul Hellyer." He's like, "They're aliens." Yeah. they've been here, and then people are like, "Oh, he's just crazy now." And I'm like, "Is he though?" Because that's a weird thing to like to just come out and be like, you know, if he was actually like sick and, you know, has dementia stuff, to be like, "You know what we should do? Put this guy, give him a platform." You know, that's just, it seems kind of out of, you know, unreasonable. And
People will say, "Well, if there's anything to it, you would have deathbed confessions." And he might not have been on his deathbed, but he was definitely towards the end of his lifespan.
Yeah, he doesn't care
anymore.
That
was essentially, that was essentially a deathbed confession, and nobody really took it seriously. And to be fair, his claims seem pretty outlandish, but what if there was something to it?
If there's even a grain of truth to some of that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that goes the same thing. You could say the same thing with Bob Lazar, right? Like, maybe he's not telling the truth about everything, but if there's some truth, and we know there is some truth to what he's saying, where does that stop, right?
Yeah. Well, there definitely was some truth to Bob Lazar's story, and there definitely were some fabrications. So it's kind of an interesting story. That's a whole other can of worms. To me, that one kind of seems like a psyop, but I mean, anything's possible. That's a weird one.
I think we talked about it before and we were like, he's the perfect guy. He's brilliant. He's the crazy rocket guy, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe, you know, because I think it's, he didn't go to university like he said. But I think, I personally believe, I think he just lied about going to university because he was so smart, but he couldn't get the jobs he wanted without having the credentials. So I think he just lied. And I think they knew that. I think whoever hired him and brought him to S4 at the time knew that he lied. And they're like, perfect. Because if he says anything, we're just going to out him as a full of shit. Right? Like, it's a fraud. It's perfect backstory. Is then they come out and they're like, this guy's a fraud. He didn't even go to Boston. He didn't go to these universities like he said. There's no record of them there. Because that makes more sense to me than someone went in and deleted all the records and swapped out pictures to make sure he wasn't in there. You know, you would have some classmates or something come forward and be like, no, he was in, like, none of that. I just think he lied about that in order because he was smart. And he's like, well, I'm not going to school. And I should be doing these jobs because I know everything. And so we just lied.
Yeah, that's one possibility for sure. It's a weird case. I don't know that I've completely made my mind up on it. There's, you know, I kind of go back and forth on that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I love the Lazar one and stuff. And how'd you find this book? Oh, Whitley Strieber Whitley Strieber is the editor.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
Yeah, it says on Goodreads, the UFO briefing document, the best available evidence. It's Don Berliner and Whitley Strieber, editor.
Huh. I don't see on my copy, I don't see Whitley Strieber's name on it.
That's weird. Oh, no, you know what it is? He's credited as editor, but on the bottom it says with an introduction by Whitley Strieber.
Oh, I see. So okay.
In the one I'm looking at, it says right at the top, Whitley Strieber's hidden agendas. So he must have he was slapping his name on it, you know, and that probably helped move the needle a little bit at the time.
Yeah, it's possible.
But it's interesting. I mean, you think about some of these these oligarchs that have had a real interest in this topic, right? Rockefeller and then Bigelow, right? And there's something of interest when these people with these just mass amounts of money use some of that, and you know, sometimes quite a bit, to research and research these topics. It's interesting.
Yeah, and I think in this case, I suspect that Lawrence Rockefeller had access to information that the average person doesn't, and he wrote this to try to convince the government to release that information so that you could have a public discourse on it. That's kind of my suspicion, but who knows for sure? I mean, you know, unfortunately, I think he passed away in 2004, so we can never ask him, but It's kind of a strange little document.
Yeah, it is.
You want another quote?
Yeah, yeah.
I got a quote from Canada.
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, this one's from Wilbert Smith, who was the head of Project Magnet, the first Canadian government UFO investigation in the 50s. And in a top secret memorandum, he said, "The matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher even than the H-bomb. Flying saucers exist. Their modus operandi is unknown, but a concentrated effort is being made by a small group headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. The entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be of tremendous significance." And that kind of really caught my attention because Vannevar Bush was involved with the CIA, and this quote opens up like a whole other can of worms. This is pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think I only vaguely remember looking into Project Magnet. It's just anytime you say Canadian government and investigations, I'm like, listen, our government, not a lot of money to put a lot of science behind these things. It was probably a lot of guys watching the skies.
Yeah, but you would think it talks about the United States here, and you'd think that the United States would want to work closely with Canada, because if we didn't, then that would be like a huge hole in our defense to
for
the
Russia,
north.
Yeah.
So you would think that our militaries would work pretty closely together, because it would benefit both countries to do so.
Oh, yeah. So we would probably have some sort of joint task force or something working on these things. You know, realistically, yeah. It was probably Project Magnet, a Canadian government project run completely by Americans. That's more than likely.
That would not surprise me.
Yeah, completely, you know, shopped out to all the Americans. We're like, yeah, it's Canadian though, right? Like, yeah, we'll keep the Canadian thing on it. Hey, man, thank you so much for the call, and plug your show. Where can people find it?
Okay. Yeah, sure. I got my show is All Things Strange, and you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Any podcatcher should be able to find it.
And how do you support? What's the best way to support your show for people who find it, listen it, love it? Which is going to happen.
Yeah, just listen and subscribe. And if you like it, we got a Patreon with extra episodes. If you want to support it that way, then I won't complain.
Beauty. All right, Agent Anderson, take care of yourself.
All right. Peace out.
Bye. Lines are open. If there's someone on the line still, I saw they were, I'll take the call, but I got to end this one tonight. Oh, there they are. Cosmic Channels, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Daniel Levitt. I'm calling from California.
Hey, man, how's it going tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, not bad. What do you got for us tonight?
So it's up to you. I saw a white Tic Tac on Mount Wilson, and I saw a lady in white in another canyon in California.
Damn. All right. Let's go to the... let me look at the chat here. Chat, Tic Tac or white lady? That's what I'm curious about here. All right. Let's go Tic Tac.
Okay. So Tic Tac, I am on the top of Mount Wilson, which is a mountain on the top of California. And when you drive by and you look up at the towers, they look like Star Wars. So I was driving, looking up at the towers. And then all of a sudden, about 300 feet above the towers, a white Tic Tac goes from horizon to horizon in about a quarter second with no light trail behind it. It was not a meteor. It was not a satellite. It was not an asteroid. Yeah, that's no idea what I saw, but it was unmistakably a white LED Tic Tac going through the sky faster than the speed of sound. No sound barrier break.
Very strange. No, like no noise, no nothing, no sand barrier break.
None.
And how fast would you say?
I would say it went from horizon to horizon in about a half or quarter of a second.
And it's weird because like if it was a meteor or something, that should like, you know, maybe people see meteors shooting super fast.
There would be trails.
There'd be a trail. Yeah. There'd be, you know, burning up in the atmosphere.
Exactly. But this thing was a perfect tic-tac-shaped white LED light that was just glowing and going as fast as you've ever seen anything go.
How long did you see it, approximately?
Quarter to half a second.
So this thing was just absolutely moving.
Yep, and it went in the same line that I was driving in and went just horizon to horizon, completely gone.
So like it came from behind you
fast.
And then like
it came from behind me. I was looking up at the towers as I was driving, and then all of a sudden I saw it fly past and just disappear on the horizon.
Wow. I'm just trying to think if there's
and
anything
then,
that,
shortly
that
after
be.
That I saw the U.S. military declassified that F-16 footage.
Oh, of the Go Fast video?
Of them chasing the Tic Tac.
Oh, the Tic Tac? I thought the F-16 was the GoFast. I think they're both the same.
Or maybe it was an F-14, but it was something the U.S. Navy released about them chasing a Tic Tac-shaped object.
And that's off the coast of California where they shot that stuff, I'm pretty sure.
It was, and it was right around the same time.
That's really interesting. It makes me think, ooh, kind of give me little shivers. I wonder if this is, if there was, you know, a flap that, a UFO flap that we were unaware of at the time. That was just starting to heat up maybe and you were fortunate enough to see one of these things, you know, just rocket through the sky.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is, but it definitely piqued my interest and kind of expanded my mind to the possibility of things being there that we don't understand.
How often are you looking up at the sky now?
Pretty often, but I mean, no more than usual.
Yeah. You know, listen, we got some time. Let's hear this lady in white story too.
Okay, so I was driving in a canyon road in California at about 4 a.m, and I had driven the entire road by myself and hadn't seen a single car, which is kind of not common for this road because people like to stop on the sides and look at things. And I came around this one turn that we call a wildlife turn because there used to be a wildlife way station there. Yeah. And inside one of the turns, there is a cave that has like a satanic ritual thing built inside of it.
And like that's a known thing. Like that's people are like, yeah, there's a.
Yeah, the locals there know about it. And so I go past this turn that has that. And in the opposite lane, there was a girl in a long white dress with long black hair, straight, just spinning in circles in the road. And so I flew past and I was going pretty quick. I went down a couple turns, turned around just to make sure that there was no cars or something down the road. Maybe she was like broke down or something. But no, nothing on the road. So I turned around and went back to the turn and she was completely gone. And I drove the rest of that night and didn't see any cars, any people, nothing.
So she was across the road from the cave where that cave is located?
She was, yes, exactly.
And just spinning? Just
probably 100 feet up the road.
Do you see any facial expression or anything? Like, did you get a glimpse of your face? Just the...
I did a little bit, and it just looked like a normal girl kind of looking down at the ground, wistfully spinning in the middle of the lane.
And when you say that, like, arms out, like... But, like, no emotion on her face?
Yeah, like, you know that traditional ballerina spin, but not with the arms up, just where, like, arms down at the side, spinning in circles, kind of looking like she was flowing with the wind.
Whoa, that is creepy.
Yeah, that was a weird one. So I'm not sure if I saw somebody that was dressed up as one, or I saw something weird, you know? I never know.
I mean, when I hear stories like that and you tell me there's like this known like satanic ritual cave there, my brain always goes to like, did someone want you to come out, get out of the car there?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And I've heard all the stories of women in white, so it's a pretty scary concept.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, like let's just say like lady in white. Or if it's not someone dressed up as it, like, why were they doing it? Were they there to, like, try to get you to that cave? Right?
It could be.
Right? To try to see.
You never know.
Right? Because it's like, I mean, you got to think, like, that, like, a woman on the side of the road at night, you're good, like, a lot of times you're going to draw someone to stop. You are.
Absolutely.
And to check on you. And it's like, ah, man, terrifying.
Yeah, and there couldn't have been more than 45 seconds to a minute when I turned around and went back up, and I didn't see anybody. Looked over the edge, didn't see anybody.
Did you get out of your car?
I did, yeah, but oof. After going down the road 5 turns, turning damn. Around, coming damn. Back up, damn. Got up, looked God over the damn. Edge, didn't see anything.
Brave man, Daniel. You're a braver man than me. Maybe I would have done a turnaround, like the double U-turn. I'm not getting out of my car. Maybe I'll roll down the window to hear if I
understand that. Hear I drive up there a lot and people get broke down. So if someone's there, I'm going to try and help you.
Oh, yeah. I hear you. But you're getting out. You're investing. Brother, you were investigating. You were looking over the edge.
I guess it's one of those things you're used to.
And you're just trying to like reason what you saw. You're like, okay, they must have gone here then. There's nowhere else for them to go. Where did they go?
Exactly.
Did you call out?
What do you mean call out?
Hello? Any hello? Hey.
Oh, no. No, I didn't. I just got out, looked around. Okay, no one's here. Got out. Got back in and left.
Terrifying. It's terrifying. What do you think sticks with you more when you like when you're just out? Do you think the tic-tac or seeing the white lady?
I think the tic-tac, because the white lady can be explained by somebody just messing with people.
Yeah.
Whereas the tic-tac, I don't understand what I saw. And if it's our own government, if it's extraterrestrial, who knows? But it's a very interesting thing when you see something that cannot be explained.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Two wild stories. What, Daniel, can I ask how you found the show?
My friend Derek Cottle told me to call in and tell you guys these stories.
Oh, right on.
Tell me his.
Right on. Beauty. A couple beauties. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing those stories.
Yeah, of course, man. Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Whew. Dude, I don't like the Lady in White stories. They freak me out. I always feel like they're luring people. I saw someone else on the line. There they are. Let's see. What's going on here? Now we're heating up. Cosmic Channels, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey. Brooke Byram.
Oh, there he is. Hey, can you turn the live stream off in the background?
What's that?
I think I heard the live stream in the background, if you don't mind hitting pause on that.
I'm outside now.
Oh, beauty. All right. So you were saying that you had, an experience in the woods.
Yes, there was a few.
I'm intrigued. I want to hear about it.
All right. So I was a hunting guide. It's up the Bull River, Fernie, BC. And if a person, it's super, super remote.
Yeah, a lot of, I've been in that area, and it's like, there's not, like, you can get out into the, into nowhere land pretty quick out there in that country.
Yeah, like the second you, yeah. So anyway, I'll cut to the chase. I was maybe 20 years old, cutting trails, and I got dropped off. It was like, yeah, we'll cut this trail. And then, because I got dropped off with enough food to get to the cabin. There's a cabin back there.
And so how long of a, you're getting dropped off with food, how long is this expected to take?
Oh, you're going to be back there for a day.
Okay.
Like, they'll drop you off in the morning. Like, spend the day cutting trail, spend the night in the cabin.
And are these cabins like trapper cabins, like just kind of built in the deep woods there?
Pretty much. They're like super, yeah.
Basic.
Super remote. It's basically, they drop them off with a chopper, and it's a green shed, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
They drop them off. I'm sorry. I'm making the story take longer than it needs to.
No, it's all good. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, so that was our job. They drop us off with a chainsaw, gas, lunch, whatever. And that was pretty much it. Like, you were on your own. Like, it's pretty much, the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So how was it,
like, as far as
staying in this kind of thing in the middle, like, how was that for you, staying just isolated like that in the deep woods?
It didn't bother me that much until this one time. And I was cutting trail, I was by myself. Like, it was no big deal. I was like busy, like chainsaw in your hand, cutting trail, middle of nowhere. And then I started hearing like wood knocks and like just weird whistles.
Just like a one, and like then, single singular loud.
Like, there's like three of them. Three whistles.
Ooh, that's
and then I didn't really think much of it. And then I kept trail till it's probably noon, and then I sat down to have lunch. And I put my back towards the trail, and then a tree just—it was pretty much a javelin. That's the best how I can explain it. Just a javelin.
Just got ejected out of the forest.
Yeah, like just a javelin towards me,
and like from behind you.
From behind me, yeah, because I was sitting down to have lunch, and straight from my back, just a tree. Like, trees fall, but not like that.
Like, it was
a jab.
And it just shot. Did it land beside you, kind of shooting the woods off to your side? Like, how close was it to hit?
It's probably like 5 feet beside me.
Oh wow! So like, how startled were you?
Yeah, that scared the hell out of me.
So when you're standing there after that, were you like looking around? Did you see anything, hear anything immediately after that?
No, it was silent after that.
Oh, that is so creepy. Did you get any weird vibe? Did you get a weird vibe, like the hair on your arm standing up, like bad juju out there? What were you feeling?
Yeah, after that, it was just super creepy. Like, yeah, it was funny. Like I still have to cut the trail because, you know, like everyone's, I mean, the trail still needs to get cut.
Yeah.
But it was just super creepy. And that wasn't even the worst part. Like as far as, because that was like right off the bat, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then I still like pushed further. And then I still kept cutting trail. And then rocks started getting thrown at me. And I'm like, well, there's like nobody out here. There's nobody. Nobody out here.
Yeah, and it's not like British Columbia is known for having like bush people, like homeless people living like in the deep woods. It's not really a thing. Especially in this kind of area, for people who aren't listening, like the winters get cold, there's a lot of snowpack. So it's like this would not be a viable location for someone to be living just like
yeah, like
roughing it.
No, like I know for a fact, like nobody's out here. Like all the trees are down from the spring. I'm busy cutting them, and I'm getting like rocks thrown at me and trees. And then it started like that, like with rocks thrown at me, and then it slowed off.
And like,
then I started hearing wood knocks.
Like how? So when these rocks, like how big are these rocks?
Maybe grapefruit size.
Oh, so quite big. And are they striking you at all? Or are they just landing around you?
They're just landing around me. Yeah. And then there's like a cabin that it's kind of hard to find. If you haven't guided there for a while, it's kind of hard to find. But then I found the cabin, and that was my job, to like spend the night there and then cut the next
trail,
like that whatever mile of trail out. And then that's when shit got fucking scary, because I got to the cabin. It wasn't quite dark, but I did my, you know, camping thing. Made dinner and whatever, and then it got dark. And then things started landing on the roof of the cabin. It's basically a tin shed.
So you're here, like everything, that's loud. Like that's really, that'd be shocking.
Yeah, like everything just started landing, like rocks started landing on the shed. Not the shed, but like the cabin.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's nobody up here. I know there's nobody up here.
When do you go out in like this? Are you armed, or you just have a chainsaw and basically your tools?
I didn't bring a gun because I had a chainsaw.
Oof. So you're stressing.
I didn't bring a gun because I was like, everything's going to be scared away with it.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Chainsaw.
Yeah. Like, honestly, I would have thought the exact same thing. You're like, oh, it makes so much noise. Nothing's coming. Everything's running away.
Exactly. Like, and the entire night, just things like rocks landing on the roof. Like there was hoots and like the Sierra sounds.
Yeah.
There were Sierra sounds all around that place.
And did this lasted all night?
It would go on for probably an hour, and then they'd lay off. And then it would pick up again. And then, yeah, like, I never slept all night. Like, it got to the point where I started the chainsaw. I started inside the cabin. And they're just filled up with smoke, and then I started outside the cabin just to block out the noise.
Yeah.
just to, like, where I started the chainsaw and stuck it outside just where it was running.
So when you got up in the morning, like, other than, like, rocks and stuff everywhere, like, anything else happened, or was that the end?
That was the end.
That's so strange, man. What do you think it is, being a hunting guide? What do you think caused that experience?
I think we just got too deep in their territory.
Well, that's kind of what, like, you know, looking at the chat and stuff, it's like, you know, maybe you were walking into, you know, Bigfoot country there, and they started to knock and whistle to try to warn you. And then when you got in too close, then it's like, all right, now they're throwing rocks and stuff. And then when you started to leave, they started to go back to the knocks. But when you're camping in the wood, they're basically letting you know you're not welcome. Like, leave. That's what it feels like when I hear your story.
I think that's exactly what it was. Like, I've heard knocks before, this time I pushed through them, and they that was too far for them.
BC, we're in Bigfoot country, so like Pacific Northwest, all over these areas, you know, there's people that claim. I mean, you're like Cranbrook and Bull River. I mean, that's not too far from where Todd Standing says that he knows where a family of Bigfoot exists, and he's been trying to sue the government to get protection for them. So it's like you're right in that area. So that's a terrifying account. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that.
Yeah, it's just up to there. Sorry, I couldn't put into better words, but
it's all good, man. It's good. You put it into great words. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Brooke.
Yeah, no worries, man.
All right, man. Take care of yourself. Stay out of those woods.
Yeah, I don't go into the woods anymore after that.
All right, man. Take care of yourself.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Whew. Listen, if you have an experience where you're in the woods and you're getting rocks and trees chucked at you, time to go. Time to go. You're going to have to start revving that chainsaw Evil Dead style. But that's going to wrap it up for this week of Cosmic Channels. Thank you all for tuning in. And just like last week, you know, we're even though the shows and the calls end here, we got one last story that's going to be read by me. Before the outro and everything. The other thing is, listen, hit Cosmic Channels up with a 5-star review. You're on Apple iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you have an opportunity to, you know, share a little love to Cosmic Channels, do it. It helps the show. It helps us grow. If you're listening on Spotify, you can leave comments on episodes. Leave comments. Shoot questions. And listen, if you're listening to the show, you've never come and hung out at a live stream, come hang out at a live stream. And if you're hanging out at a live stream, I know you got a story, so you should be calling in 1-833-703-0424. But that's going to be it for this week of Cosmic Channels. We'll see you all next week. And November 7th is the next live stream, so we'll see you all then. Peace, everybody. The lines are now closed. Look at this absolute monster story. The ghost of John Lennon. I used to have a gig where I would assist in a traveling John Lennon art show. In my opinion, John's art was pretty lousy. I can't really describe it. You'll have to check it out for yourself. Nevertheless, it was a fascinating gig that paid pretty well and may have led to my encounter with the ghost of John Lennon. My job was to drive a box truck full of art from Florida to various cities where we would transform vacant buildings in upscale locations into an exhibition for the weekend. In addition to driving the art from the gallery in Florida, I would set up walls, hang art, do lighting, and act as a personal assistant to the sellers and owners during the show. My employers had been doing this for years, and these were pretty classy shows in places like Cape Cod, Princeton, Manhattan. It wasn't uncommon for the company to spend $100,000 in advance of a show on rental space, advertising, and crew expenses. Whew. Like I said, it was a pretty fun gig. My bosses were 420 friendly, and I love a good road trip, especially on weed. So I toke it up on the road, enjoying new scenery and even taking detours if scheduling allowed. On the trip to Manhattan, I did just that. I decided to chart a slightly longer course through the mountains as to avoid the I-95 bullshit. It was a decision, began a course of events that would alter my life. I was driving through the farmlands of Western Maryland when I noticed a flashing blue lights behind me. I'd been through checkpoints before and I wasn't high at the time, so I played it cool. The officer informed me that he was performing a random inspection of my truck. You see, all commercial vehicles, even those not requiring a CDL, are required to have a list of safety shit and can be pulled over and inspected randomly. It didn't take long before the officer informed me that he could see a pack of beer and was going to have to search the vehicle. I told him that I hadn't had anything to drink. It was just leftovers from the night before in the hotel. Didn't matter. Alcoholic beverages are not allowed in the cab of commercial vehicles. That's when the second officer arrived. Now's a good time to mention that I am a licensed concealed carry gun owner in the state of Florida, and along with my toothpaste, I had my .38 special revolver in my backpack. I was planning on doing some hiking in rural Virginia. I also didn't own a gun safe back home and had roommates, so I brought the gun on the trip, assuming it would be even safer than leaving it at home where it might be stolen, and assumed it would be a non-issue. It became an issue almost immediately. For anyone who doesn't know, gun laws vary different states. And as it turns out, Maryland doesn't like guns. They also found my weed. I immediately informed them of both when they asked the standard, are there any drugs or weapons in the vehicle question. In retrospect, I now realize that the ghost of John Lennon told that officer to pull me over. You see, I was driving his artwork to his city and final resting place. And the ultimate sin was in bringing the exact gun that was used by Mark David Chapman to kill John Lennon. More specifically, a Black 38 Special snub-nose revolver containing 5 hollow point bullets. To my defense, I was not that familiar with John Lennon, much less the details of his murder. I certainly did not know anything about his murder weapon at the time. Anyways, I had just been arrested for possession of marijuana, alcohol, gun charges, and not having my goddamn safety flares. I was in jail, and I had no idea for how long. Meanwhile, the company truck with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of shitty line drawings was on the side of the highway. 6 people, including my boss, had already flown into NYC from all over the country to run the show. The short-term lease of a 4-story building in one of the most expensive locations in New York City had already been signed. The biggest, most expensive John Lennon art show of the year and possibly all time was in jeopardy, and it was all my fault. It was Friday evening, about 6 p.m. I was in a cold cell, sweating bullets, completely stressed out by the fact that I just cost my employers a shit ton of money and reputation, and I was facing a legal shitstorm. I was supposed to have an initial hearing with a constable, but surely they had all gone home for the weekend. I had no idea of my fate, and the uncertainty was crushing me with anxiety. Then I heard my name. It was almost 7 p.m., and a guard informed me that I was meeting with the constable. Why was he still here? Didn't matter. He read my charges and asked about the gun, etc. After approximately 5 minutes of strangely pleasant form of confession, he told me that he was releasing me on an unsecured bond. What exactly does that mean? I asked, assuming the worst. And he said, it means you're free to go tonight. And if you don't show up for your trial, you owe the state of Maryland $5,000. Holy shit, I was free to go tonight. I just might make it to the show after all. I couldn't believe it. I didn't have to call a bail bondsman. In fact, I hadn't made any calls since booking, and here they are processing me back out. It turns out, through a stroke of luck, aka John Lennon's ghost, the arresting officer took pity on me. They gave me the option to have the truck impounded or left on the side of the highway. I chose the latter because the company could eventually fly someone and retrieve it over the weekend. Furthermore, I got to ride shotgun on the way to jail. And he even gave me directions back to the truck if I got released that night. Initially, I thought he was joking, but there I was being released at about 8:30 p.m. And I knew it was only about 4 miles back to the truck, and I took off in my flip-flops and started jogging. As I jogged in the dark along the cold frontage road back to the truck, I began to cry. I had just been on an emotional roller coaster. Why was the judge working late Friday? Why was I being released the same day with drugs and weapons charges? Why didn't they automatically impound the truck? Why did the officer who arrested me show me how to get back to the truck? And why did he intentionally decline to post a 24-hour mandatory off-the-road order for the truck's license plate? I believe this was the ghost of John Lennon. A few minutes later, I saw the outline of an unmarked box truck on the side of the highway. I had made it. Hallelujah. Sure, I had to wade through hundreds of yards of waist-high grass, eventually slipping and sliding on hundreds of locusts that were squishing between my bare feet and my sandals. And sure, there was 12 inches of barbed wire on top of a chain-link fence separating the highway from the frontage road. I didn't give a single shit. I was free. I drove the rest of the night without sleeping, stopping only for gas and coffee, and I just barely made it to the show on time. Nobody in the rest of the crew knew what happened, and the show went off without a hitch. I felt like shit all weekend. I didn't go sightseeing and was especially irritable that gig, but at least I wasn't responsible for ruining the biggest John Lennon art show of 2012. One question that still haunts me to this day is, if I hadn't taken that detour, instead gone straight up the I-95, would I not have been arrested? Or would I have been arrested in Baltimore, Maryland on drug and weapons charges? Everyone from the cops to my lawyer said I would have been fucked. Turns out Baltimore has some of the harshest minimum penalties for guns and drugs in the country, and their prison system is pretty tough, especially for a 160-pound, red-haired, middle-class man child like myself. I will never know for sure, but one could argue that the ghost of John Lennon was watching over his art as well as the person transporting it, and didn't want that gun anywhere near the place where he was shot and killed by one just like it. Yet he wanted his show to go on, which is why he made sure that I still made it to New York City on time for one of the most profitable John Lennon art shows ever. My boss still doesn't know what happened. Fast forward a few months from then, I eventually had to go back to Maryland from Florida for my official court date. This would be the sentencing hearing where I would be sentenced to fines, prison time, or perhaps, worst of all, community service. In the meantime, I was living in Florida free on bond, meaning that if I didn't go back to the court hearing in Maryland, I would have an arrest, would have a warrant issued, and owe the state $5,000 on top of my sentence. It sucked living life and going to work every day knowing I had to eventually fly back and was likely facing jail time in another state. I truly lose my job, and I also wondered constantly if life in prison was really as bad as I've heard and what types of karate combos I could use to block my butthole. During this period, my mailbox was flooded with postcards from lawyers. I called a few and eventually settled on one that I could afford. At first, I was signed to a junior lawyer from the firm who was a complete piece of shit. But thanks to the ghost of John Lennon, she was fired before my case, and the head lawyer took over without increasing the fee, which was only $1,000. This is important because he turned out to be a longtime friend of the prosecutor on my case. Not only is this not normal, but it's actually illegal to some extent. When the big moment came, I walked into the courthouse a free man. I dressed up out of respect, but with the irony of knowing full well I may be wearing orange for a while. The whole thing took about 30 minutes and was just as much of a roller coaster as the night when I was arrested. The judge literally mentioned in front of everyone that he wouldn't allow the fact that he was a big fan of John Lennon to influence his decision. He then sentenced me to 1 year jail time. I gasped for the first time in my life, oh fuck. I thought as my knees went weak, my lawyer grabbed my elbow and whispered for me to shut the fuck up. The judge wrapped things up, and I don't know what else he said because I just went numb. When it was finished, my lawyer led me out of the side room where he gave me the best news of my life. Turns out that 1 year sentence was suspended as long as I paid my fines on time. That's it. If I paid my fines by a certain date, I wouldn't have to go to jail and fight for my butthole's honor. I was free to go again. All thanks to the ghost of John Lennon. But that's not all. Fast forward 4 years, I get a call. It's a detective from Maryland who wants to know if I wanted my gun back. Turns out the judge overruled the prosecutor and ordered the gun to be released back to my custody. Why? I have no idea. It only took 4 years, but now I have my trusty, rusty revolver back. The whole fiasco eventually cost me $2,000. I'm super lucky, but I lost a shit ton of hair. That's the story of the ghost of John Lennon. Oh my God. That's phenomenal story. I'm glad. Pretty cool you get to drive around with the art, even though you're saying it's not that great. It's interesting, you know, does a ghost have that kind of pull in Maryland? I'm not sure. But it is kind of a, you know, I guess it makes you wonder, like, you know, there was a fork in the road and you literally went the other way, and would things been different or worse off? Kind of interesting story. Thank you so much, Skeezy, for sending that in. Appreciate it.
real ones stay to the end. Y'all the real ones.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packs of juicy Kroger red, green, or black seedless grapes for $3.99 with your card and a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packs of flavorful Private Selection 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $4.99 each with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.